This Saturday night, the sport of boxing presents seemingly its last big fight of 2007. And of course, when there's a big fight, we have to invite our sweet scientist, Lars from No Masa Online, one of the best boxing writers out there and a close, close personal friend of mine. And the man knows more about boxing than I will ever know in my life. So every time there's a big fight, we give him the stage here at JariPark.com. It's been several weeks, since we've spoken to Lars. So first off, Lars, how are things going over there?
Things going well, man. Just holding it down out here in Davis, California, center of the boxing universe.
I'm sure, and I know you're originally from the Northeast. I'm sure you're not missing this snowstorm that we're getting over here. So while Davis, California doesn't seem to be a hub of exciting action, you know, at least you got that going for you.
Yeah, no. The weather, it's about 56 degrees and sunny here. So we always have the weather.
All right. So as I mentioned, it's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke to you. I think it was right after Cotto Mosley, which was almost a month ago now. Lots been going down in the world of boxing. And obviously we have Hatton Mayweather coming up on Saturday night. But bring us up to speed. What's been going on in the squared circle?
Well, it's been a lot of big news, no doubt about it. Certainly the biggest news has all centered around Manny Pacquiao, whose future seemed to have big consequences for the entire sport. And he's basically, if you believe Bob Arum, has set out his plan for 2008. And he has one fight made, and that's a big fight. That's a mega fight for boxing fans, certainly. March 15 in Vegas, the Manny Pacquiao-Juan Manuel Marquez rematch. Of course, their first fight in 2004 is a classic. You know, Pacquiao knocked Marquez down three times in the first round, looked like he was just going to get him out of there. Marquez's best performance of his career. Marquez came back, and by the end of the fight, really had Pacquiao on the ropes. I think if there were two more, if that was a 15-round fight, you know, back in the old days, I think Marquez would have won that fight. So it ended up in a draw. And so that's a rematch that I'd always hoped would happen, and I think it's good for boxing that it will happen. It'll have a lot of drama, too, because in that 130-pound region where these three Mexicans and one Filipino have been circling and fighting each other for years now. You know, Pacquiao has effectively retired two of the legends, you know, Barrera and Morales. And now the third will be coming out for revenge. So that fight will have a lot of juice for it. The other opponent that was a potential for Pacquiao for that March slot is evidently going to be fighting on the undercard, David Diaz, who's a lightweight. And then evidently, Arum is saying that if Pacquiao beats Marquez, he will fight David Diaz in July, and that'll be for a lightweight belt. But then the really exciting news, and all of the talk really seems to be drifting in this direction, that of this Oscar De La Hoya-Manny Pacquiao fight that it seems now to be scheduled for, if Pacquiao comes through with victories in both of those bouts, it'll be in September, and it'll be the last fight of Oscar's career. And so that's obviously a gigundous fight. Actually, somebody asked me the other day if I thought Pacquiao-Oscar would be bigger than Floyd-Oscar, and I don't actually think it would be. I don't think, even though Pacquiao's a huge star in boxing and obviously is basically the king of the Philippines, I don't think that he will be able to generate quite the type of excitement that that Floyd was, but still, that'll be a gigantic fight. So that's exciting news, and it also means that if that's the way it's going to go, it also means that Oscar's May slot is open, because Oscar said that he wants to fight twice next year. You have to wonder who that would be. I would imagine, particularly if this Pacquiao thing is real, I would imagine that it will not be Miguel Cotto, because I really doubt that Oscar would want to jeopardize. Pacquiao would probably be the biggest fight that he could make out there, so I doubt that he would want to step in there with a man record like Cotto in May. So we'll really have to see who Oscar's opponent will be in May. He has said that he would like to fight Ricky Hatton. Everybody wants to fight Ricky Hatton, right? I imagine that he'll only fight Ricky Hatton if Hatton beats Floyd, and I don't see that happening. So at this point, I really have no idea who Oscar would fight in May. The other huge news And this is recent, is that the Klitschko-Ibrahimov heavyweight unification fight is made. Now it's official. It's February 23rd. That had been rumored for a while. That's exciting. Not an exciting fight, but it's exciting just that this heavyweight unification concept is becoming reality, you know, because everybody has been dying for years to finally get these four or five heavyweight champions into the ring against each other. And so Klitschko begins his march towards becoming the first unified champions, the first, you know, kind of agreed upon heavyweight champion since Lennox Lewis. And right now, given the competition that's out there, I think he'll do it. I think he'll easily beat Ibrahimov. So there's the roundup as it stands right now, the recent big news.
And on top of all that, this past weekend, a couple of big winners, Antonio Tarver, Vernon Forrest on a Showtime card night. And I only bring up Vernon Forrest because as you know, predictable with you, you fail to mention my Canadian boy, Joachim Alcine, fighting this Friday night, defending his light middleweight championship against Alfonso Mosquera. And yesterday we spoke to UFC superstar George St. Pierre. He's going to be sitting there ringside cheering on his Montreal boy. What are your thoughts on my boy Alcine, and could there be a unification bout against Forrest sometime in 2008?
I could see that.
And don't tell me you don't care
happen.
About him. Don't give me the old runaround. I mean, this guy is.
I'm not going to say that I don't care about him. I can't say that I have a lot of thoughts about him. I know who he is. I've never seen him fight. I could certainly see that fight happening with Forrest, though. I mean, that's about where I'm kind of disappointed for the Viper, because I like him. And I thought after he beat Baldemir last summer that he would be in line for a big payday against someone on the you know, he's got a big enough name. I thought that he could fight a De La Hoya, or, you know, somebody big might want to take him as a tune-up bout or something and get him a big payday. He seems like he's kind of doomed to the second, or dare I say, third rank right now with the choice
whoa,
of
whoa.
Opponents that are out there. One thing I do want to say is that about this past weekend is that I have never seen a fighter look so bad in winning a fourth round knockout in my life as Antonio Tarver did,
yeah.
Beating Danny Santiago. Jesus, did you see that fight?
I did see that fight, yes. On Showtime.
Oh my God! What, I mean, and he looks almost like a stationary fighter now, and this guy he's fighting is so bad. The way he was loading up with that left hand, I just thought, I mean, he went from 60 to zero quicker than just anybody I've ever seen in my life. I guess if there's ever been an advertisement for don't gain a bunch of weight to do a movie,
right, exactly.
You know, Antonio Tarver, because he was like a star before he did that thing. Obviously, he was big enough that they wanted him in Rocky, and the next thing you know, he's just completely irrelevant. Bernard Hopkins just retired that guy. So,
yeah, it's a bad
I thought
sign
that was shocking.
It's a bad sign when you could say that your biggest win of the last 3 years was against Rocky Balboa.
Exactly.
You know?
And even that was a very narrow decision, as I recall.
Right, exactly. That's a very good point. A very narrow decision. And it was an exhibition fight on top of all
exhibition.
That.
Exhibition.
But
yeah,
let's talk about what's coming up on the horizon, because obviously it's the big one, Mayweather-Hatton. And you know, before we get into the actual fight and your prediction and analysis and all that good stuff, a couple of weeks ago on your website, nomas-nyc.com, you were very sour towards Mayweather-Hatton 24/7. And on my site, jarrypark.com, I mentioned how much I loved it. And I just love the difference between the two characters, the juxtaposition of good guy, bad guy. I think it really reminds me of a pure wrestling storyline where you have this clear heel bad guy against the babyface, Ricky Hatton. Now with all the shows pretty much in the can, have you changed your stance on 24/7? Were you able to enjoy it more than the last one involving De La Hoya, or did you still feel like it was a bit too manufactured in terms of the old Brit sitting in his pub having his Guinness type of thing?
That piece that I wrote on Nomas was reviewing the first episode, and I was a little disappointed just in that I thought that just on that, I thought that Ricky Hatton's public image is so manufactured, and it just gets a little old after a while, hearing about the guy with his darts and his fish and chips, and you know, it's just like, all right, guy, we get it. You know, you're the man's man in the pub. And at the same time, then you've got the Floyd on his angle, money, money, money. You know, I love Floyd and Floyd and the Floyd Oscar 24/7, but he gets old too. You know, he's a one trick pony. And so I just was a little bored with it. The next couple of episodes I thought got a little more interesting. So far, my favorite moments in the show, I have to say, have both been with Roger Mayweather. Oh. One, when he was shopping for his Thanksgiving groceries, just because I felt like, what the hell is this doing in this show? They must have had some time to kill. That was hilarious. And then in the most recent episode, and it was kind of like, it was kind of in the backdrop of his kid punching the dishwasher.
Yes.
But did you notice that Roger Mayweather had a sponge and he was cleaning his stove? That's about the most unpredictable thing that I ever have seen on television. Like, if you told me that Roger Mayweather actually cleans his own stove, I never would have believed you in a million years. I thought both of those details were hilarious. I've enjoyed the show. I feel like, to be honest, I feel like, you know, what I like about those shows is how they are able to penetrate the fighters' manufactured stories. And that was why I didn't like the first one, because I felt like they didn't make much of an effort on that one. They just took the party line and expected us to buy it. As it's evolved in the next couple of episodes, Floyd is what he is, you know. I mean, he's like a sociopath, so it's pretty tough to get. I'm not sure, as I wrote on Nomos, I'm not sure that there's any there. But Ricky Hatton, I feel like, particularly in the scenes with his kids, you've seen a more, the man's man of the pub routine seems like a routine to me. And the guy actually seems like a fairly quiet, thoughtful person, you know. And so at that level, I've enjoyed seeing that side of him. You know, you can't argue with 24/7 if you're a boxing fan, because, God, it's really good for the sport. It hypes the fight so much, and it gets down to the essence of the sport, really, which is that these two men are going to fight each other. And the more you know about them, invariably it becomes fascinating. It's just a fact of boxing, I think.
Yeah, there's no question that they're going to be doing more of these, you know, in the next couple of years. Hopefully they're going to be featuring other fighters than Floyd Mayweather. If you were, you know, Rick Bernstein, Ross Greenberg over at HBO, and there's a lot of big rumor matchups and some that have already been signed for 2008. Who would you base the next 24/7 around? Which two fighters with an upcoming fight would you like to see spotlighted in 4 or 5 episodes?
Well, you know, I'd like to see Cotto, I guess. It's hard to say whether his bout will be big enough. I guess the next 24/7, it's hard for me to imagine that they would do. The next super fight really on the horizon is, that's not true. You know what the next one should be, and that it probably will be. This is such a layup, is the Pavlik-Taylor rematch.
That's what I thought you'd say.
I forgot about that. I mean, that's not quite a super fight in the way that Pacquiao Marquez is, but a 24/7 could make it that way. You know what I mean? Pavlik is so ripe for a 24/7. It's unbelievable. If they did a 24/7 with him, they could probably take him to the next level. And they're very invested in doing that. So that certainly seems like the one to do it with. I'd like to see Pacquiao Marquez, too. I find Marquez in particular a fascinating fighter. I'd be interested. And I think they'd, I don't know if they'd spend the money to do with those guys, because the audience is built in for that. You know, when you put a Mexican and a Filipino in the ring together, you pretty much have two entire nations who are going to tune in come hell or high water. But I think that both of those guys have the potential to get a bigger American audience for that fight, because that's a pretty exciting fight. But yeah, Pavlik-Taylor, layup for a 24/7.
Personally, if you ask me, I'd go with Alcine Forrest. I just think that's a natural right there, but... That's just me. Just joking.
You got to make that. Yeah. You got to make that. I guess that fight would be pretty big up in Montreal.
It would be huge.
fight capital in Montreal.
It
No
is.
doubt.
Great fights over at the Bell Center. Lars, you know, De La Hoya Mayweather, the 24/7, it definitely had something to do with the record amount of pay-per-view buys for that fight. And I think everyone's in agreement that Hatton Mayweather won't quite reach that 2 million plus amount of buys. That said, though, it has to help. What are you predicting? I mean, on top of the actual fight, I'm always interested in knowing how many people watch it and how many people actually, you know, put down the $49.95 to buy the show. What are you predicting in terms of buys, a sort of ballpark figure?
I think it'll do very well. You know, obviously De La Hoya is not in it, and De La Hoya is the marquee star. You can't forget that De La Hoya, you know, had an amazing, I can't remember what the actual numbers were, but a shocking number of people tune in to see him fight Mayorga. You know, he's in a stratosphere that neither of these guys belongs to. And so particularly in that you're not going to be counting the Great Britain numbers and the American pay-per-view numbers. I mean, obviously that's a worldwide consideration for the money of why this fight is happening in the first place. And so, that said, they did do the 24/7. I do think, you know, I feel like I'm seeing almost as much coverage, you know, in the media of this fight as I was seeing it with De La Hoya Mayweather. To me, this fight is going to benefit from the fact that I really think that boxing has a little more of a buzz going right now, a buzz that was started by De La Hoya Mayweather, you know what I mean? But that fight was the beginning to me of a whole second half of the year renaissance of this sport that's happened largely because there have been so many big and great fights, you know? So right now I think that the boxing has a little excitement and people are inclined right now to write about it and not take that inevitable and boring angle that people seem to want to take on boxing for the past 5 years of, you know, its imminent death. Now people are just writing about it straight up and they're excited about it. So, no, it's not going to do anywhere near Oscar Floyd numbers, but you got to remember Oscar Floyd's the biggest fight in the history of fights right now in terms of numbers. So, I think it will do very, very respectable numbers. I think that Floyd, Dancing with the Stars, he's crossed over, I think. And as you said, everybody likes the black hat on the bad guy and the white hat on the good guy. You know what I mean? Everybody likes the Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker fight narrative. And this one seems pretty clear. Floyd seems pretty content to play the bad guy right now, so long as it makes him that money.
Absolutely, you know? Baby. All right, so let's talk about the fighters themselves and start with Ricky Hatton, the underdog. Everyone's in agreement of that. And before we break down what Hatton needs to do to possibly pull off this huge upset, as I'm talking to you now, I'm always doing research. I'm always working on my computer. And I'm actually on Ricky Hatton's Wikipedia page. And I know Wikipedia,
yeah.
I've learned this myself as a former fact checker at ESPN Classic, that you cannot trust what Wikipedia writes, but I just want to read you a quote from Wikipedia and see if you can confirm or deny this. It says, Ricky was forced to, quote, was forced to come out of the closet after being caught in the pub toilets with another bloke. Now, this is the first I've ever heard of this, and it's on Wikipedia, it's on the internet. Can you confirm or deny that?
So it must be true.
Yeah. How did that get on there? Do you think that's maybe Roger Mayweather's doing? I'm looking right at it. It says the first line in his bio.
You know, I do think that there have been Ricky Hatton is gay rumors in the past. I do not think that they are. I think that that's one of those. You know, you see this kind of stuff in politics all the time. If you look at politicians' Wikipedia pages, you'll see these savage indictments of them that get in there for whatever 20 minutes that you were on there, and then somebody takes them out. So I think that's some crap, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was up there as an update, and I just sort of had to bring it out there. But
Pretty sure Ricky Hatton, not gay.
Right, yeah. I mean, we've seen his son and all that stuff on the show. All right,
yeah.
So Hatton, 43 fights under his belt, undefeated, of course, and like I said, a huge underdog, and The last time we spoke to you, you've clearly said that you favor Floyd Mayweather in this fight. But when you look back at Hatton's career, has he ever fought anyone even remotely close to the talent that he'll see when he goes in against Floyd Mayweather? I mean, is he in for the shock of his life, or are we sort of underestimating the kind of competition that he's faced primarily over in the UK, leading up to this bout?
No, he has never seen anything like this. I thought it was pretty telling today. There's a nice little piece on ESPN.com, their boxing site, with five best fights of the two fighters' careers. So Ricky Hatton's list was Jonathan Thaxton, who went into the bout with a hearty 19-5, Eamon McGee, all these decisions for Hatton as well. I got to tell you, I've never even heard of McGee. Ben Tackey, who was a real battle axe, 24-4 at the time. Then of course Costa Zoo, which is the crowning moment of Hatton's career. Still in my Costa Zoo was a great fighter. Costa Zoo was 35. The time that he fought Ricky Hatton and was pretty much shot. He quit on his stool. And then Castillo, who was used up and fighting out of his weight class. Those are Hatton's top five. Then you go on to Floyd's top five. Yeah. All right. You got Genaro Hernandez, legend. All right. Little past his prime, definitely. 38-1-1, though, and at that point was the, what was he? He was a featherweight at that point. Genaro Hernandez, that's number five. Number four, Diego Corrales, undefeated in his prime. put Ricky Hatton against Chico in his prime. Number three in the best fight Floyd ever got in his life, Jose Luis Castillo in his prime, at lightweight. Number two, Arturo Gatti. That's on here just because of the name, but it is, I think, referential to the Hatton fight, just for the types of fighters that they are, of what Floyd did to Arturo Gatti, which is about the most embarrassing beating I've ever seen a big name fighter take. And then number one, Oscar De La Hoya. I can't believe they even put those on here. If those two lists don't tell the tale of what caliber of fighter we're dealing with here, I don't know what would. So no, Ricky Hatton's never seen anything like Floyd Mayweather in his life.
All right. So that said, if you're Camp Ricky Hatton and you're trying to deliver this blueprint as to beating, right now, definitely the pound for pound greatest fighter in the world and maybe of all time, we'll get to that in a second, what could you possibly come up with to knock off Mayweather? Is there any type of game plan that they could present, and maybe something that people haven't seen from Hatton before in terms of trying to shock the world here?
There's one fighter that Floyd went up against that gave him a lot of trouble, which was Castillo in his prime. That's got to be your blueprint fight if you're trying to beat Floyd. Of course, to do that, you have to be Jose Luis Castillo in your prime, which is a tall order. But certainly what Castillo did to Floyd was that he didn't take no for an answer. He was Joe Frazier to Floyd Ali, and he was relentless. He didn't give him an inch to breathe. Floyd can fight close up. Floyd can fight any way, but he'd rather have a little space from you to work with, than have you right on top of him. When you're right on top of him, you negate his speed a little bit and you can pound his body a little bit. You can get inside that strange Floyd Mamba defense, that he throws at you. To do that, you have to take a hell of a lot of punches, because getting close to Floyd means eating three or four before you're even there. As we all know of Jose Luis Castillo, and for reference, one can look at Castillo Corrales 1. Jose Luis Castillo in his prime was game for eating a hell of a lot of punches, And Floyd's not a big puncher, he's not going to knock you out with one shot. So long as you're not Gotti, you know, which is basically hanging your head out there to take, you know, as many as he can deliver, 8, 9, 12 punch combinations, you're going to be able to, if you've got a decent beard on you, you're going to be able to take a bunch of his shots. And to Hatton's credit, he's a tough guy. He's a rugged guy. So that certainly has to be a part of Hatton's game plan. And that's obviously the way he's gearing himself up. You just watch the 24/7 training sequences of just this relentless pressure.
Is Hatton's training complete? You know how Mayweather was making fun of him and saying,
yeah.
and then Hatton would make fun of him, just, you know, doing the constant same exact thing with Roger. Whose training is in fact for real? I mean, obviously both of them have a reason for why they do it, but is one actually more, for lack of a better term, BS than the other?
Well, I mean, I have to say, when I'm looking at them, those are two of the most telling sequences, or at least Hatton's was one of the most telling sequences to me when he was making fun of Floyd. When I watch Floyd train, I'm just jaw-droppingly, you know, interested. And I see a phenomenal athlete. Just a second, man. I got another call. let me just get rid of this call.
Oh wow, this is great. Lars going to the other line in the middle of our interview, and just letting me
we're
hang.
Good.
We're good. We're back. You're cool.
That was my chiropractor. I bounced that kid.
Thank you for taking
so,
your time.
I find Floyd's training to be riveting. I find Ricky Hatton's training to be pretty strong evidence of what I think of Ricky Hatton in general. And to me, that type of speed training that Floyd is doing, everybody knows that Floyd's not a puncher. Everybody knows that Floyd's, you know, I could see Floyd knocking Ricky Hatton out on an accumulation type TKO, but it's just evidence of when he gets that shit going, man, boy, the phenomenal speed and reflexes. And you see what somebody is up against when they're trying to hit Floyd, number one, and when they're trying to avoid getting hit by him. And in contrast, you see Ricky Hatton with, are we supposed to believe that him sparring with his trainer wearing that big fat belly pad is like, bears any resemblance to anything that will happen in the ring, you know, this Saturday night? I mean, I'm watching that and I'm thinking, well, what are you wasting your time doing this for? Like, you're going to hit Floyd like that exactly zero times in the course of this fight. I thought it was so stupid. So to me, Floyd's criticism of him, you know, and Hatton throws those big, that's what I'm thinking when I'm comparing Hatton to Castillo, because I'm remembering what kind of fighter Castillo was, how crafty he was inside, how quick he was, how skillful with his uppercuts and his straight, you know, punches. And then I watch Ricky Hatton diving with these big, wide haymakers and thinking, Christ, like, Floyd, you know, you start throwing one of those, Floyd could go sit next to Jim Lampley, smoke a cigarette, and come back in the ring before it got anywhere near his face. I mean, it's preposterous. So I'm much more impressed by Floyd's training than Hatton's training, that's for sure.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was lucky enough to be involved in a Roger Mayweather press conference, and at least 10 times he said that Floyd Mayweather is the best fighter of all time. I mean, forget about Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, whomever. I mean, he is the absolute best. Would you agree with that statement?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. Not even close. But he certainly made a claim to be the best fighter of this era. You know, the problem that assessing a fighter's greatness, and it's strange with boxing, though I guess you do it in other sports, but it's an aesthetic assessment as well as a pure numbers assessment in terms of their wins. The fact that he's undefeated, the fact that he's beaten the best fighters of his era and done it with such ease for the most part is astonishing. He is an astonishingly talented athlete and just a fighting machine, you know, but he doesn't have very much power. And frequently his fights have been uninteresting at the level at which it's a chess match in where Garry Kasparov is playing a child. You know, that's not that interesting to watch. And Floyd has never really seemed to feel the imperative to press that advantage, to make it exciting, you know, to make it dangerous for him. On that level, I mean, how could you ever compare him to someone like Sugar Ray Robinson or, Ali, obviously. You know, I don't even think he's in the top 10 or top 20, but he's great. There's no doubt about his greatness. But I think, you know, obviously, they say things like that just to hype him up. But
He was very convincing, though. You know, for a second there, he had me believing that he was. I mean, I obviously haven't had the privilege to watch some of those guys, live. You obviously see stuff on ESPN Classic, but. I don't know. For a second there, he had me believing it. In two words, give me a first and last name, obviously, in your mind, in Lars's world. Who is the best of all time?
I think it's pretty hard not to... it's the standard number one. Everybody says it, but based on the records and based on what he did, it's impossible not to say that it's three words, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson.
All right. So you gave me three. I asked for two. I was trying to set you up.
Ray Robin. All right.
Finally, Lars, before we let you go, we need a prediction. We need a round. We need hopefully it doesn't go the distance, this particular one. But, how do you see this fight going down Saturday night? Ricky Hatton against Floyd Mayweather Jr.
I'm feeling about as certain as someone could feel that Floyd is going to win this fight. I rest that case basically on one fact, which is that Floyd is going to be the bigger fighter in this fight, the naturally bigger fighter, and that to me is just preposterous. You know, I've said this before, but Ricky Hatton came over to the U.S. and tried to make a big splash as a welterweight in his first fight of this big HBO contract. He fought Luis Collazo, and he really got all he could handle. He got a gift decision, and the fight was at the very least a draw, and a case certainly could have been made that Collazo beat him, which sent Ricky Hatton running back to 140. He abandoned the sham belt that he won in that fight. Meanwhile, Floyd Mayweather just beat, you know, one of the best fighters of his generation at 154 pounds. Did it very convincingly. I mean, that wasn't a great fight, but it was a very convincing victory for Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, Floyd's always the faster fighter. It's just a fact right now that Floyd is always the faster fighter, no matter who you put him in against. And now he's the bigger fighter. You know, Ricky Hatton's power, the idea that Ricky Hatton has power is a complete sham. I don't know why anyone thinks that that's true. Arturo Gatti punches infinitely harder than Ricky Hatton does. The style in which Ricky Hatton fights is so well set up for Floyd. He's not really a great pressure fighter, because a great pressure fighter doesn't give you time to breathe. Ricky Hatton's style of fighting is you know, what's been known in unkinder circles as your jab and grab, although he doesn't really jab, but he dives in, tries to get off before you do, and then he grabs you. You know, somehow that's translated in the idea that he's an action fighter. I don't know if any of these people talking about him being an action fighter have actually seen his fights. The Kostazu fight was pretty exciting. In that kind of style, that style is so well set up for Floyd, because if you're going to dive into Floyd with the idea that you're going to get off first, well, you're going to find yourself getting hit a lot, you know, a lot. On that score, I kind of do, you know, ideally Hatton would like to think that he was going to use the Castillo fight as a blueprint for this fight. I see it more as the Gatti fight. That's the blueprint for this fight. I honestly do. And the way that Hatton is talking, too, is reminiscent to me of the Gatti talk. Now, people forget that because it's a fight, people forget that boxing is a sport, you know, and it's the great mythology of the sport that allows us to engage in it so easily and so happily in movies, you know, that really we forget that it's an athletic contest and we decide that it's a contest of the will. And that's obviously what Ricky Hatton has been pumping in his 24/7 segments. My will is greater. I simply will myself to win this fight. It doesn't work like that, you know, and it's funny because, you know, you'd never see somebody who seemed like they were decidedly outclassed saying, well, I simply will myself to beat Roger Federer. You know, my will prevail, even though I don't have the skills or the ability or really don't belong on the same court as him. It just, it's going to work the same way. And in my mind, it's going to be six love, Floyd Mayweather. So I see Floyd winning. Obviously, with Floyd, there's always a chance that I'm loath to give a hard, fast prediction for how the fight will end, because with Floyd, even if a knockout was available to him, with Floyd, there's always a chance that he'll take it the distance. You know, he's got very brittle hands. He often injures his hands in fights. The Carlos Baldomir fight with Floyd is a perfect example of a situation where I think that had he not injured a hand, he would have knocked Baldomir out. Although knocking Baldomir out was not that easy, but he was hitting Baldomir at will, and Baldomir was getting very swollen, very puffed up. And then you saw Floyd injured his hand. Suddenly he's a one-hand fighter, and then he's just coasting, you know. And it's tough to fault him on that. It's tough to fight with one hand. So what I'm saying is on that score, because of Floyd's history with that type of problem, there's always a possibility that even if the knockout is there for him, that he'll have to pull back and that he will pull back. But I would not be surprised to see a Gotti-like TKO in this fight, where Hatton, by the seventh or eighth round, has a face swollen up like a basketball, you know, and is just taking such a pounding that they have to end it. I also think Floyd will take great pleasure in exposing him in that way. So I see a very easy, routine victory. I saw one of Floyd's quotes today in a press conference that I loved, and they were asking him if he was nervous at all, you know, and if he'd been watching 24/7. And obviously, there, you know, you see these great sequences where Ricky Hatton is so ferocious, you know, and so you know, if that scared Floyd at all, and Floyd said, no, you know, I know exactly what he's going to do. I know he's going to be in there trying to kill me, but he can't and he won't. And all I can say is that relaxation is a great sensation. And I have no doubts that that's not just window dressing. I really think that Floyd is relaxed as can be because he knows what's going to happen in there. And I think it's going to be an easy win for him.
All right, Lars, great stuff as always. And hopefully on Monday you'll be able to squeeze us in between your chiropractic sessions, sparring, whatever it is you do over there in Davis.
And talking to my agent.
Right, yeah. But the next time you make us lose on a phone face-off, we're going to have to rethink this whole relationship because...
Hey, I bounced him. Don't give me none of that mess.
Great stuff. Enjoy the fight on Saturday night, and we'll speak to you on Monday to break it all down again.
All right. Thanks. Ready to go.